Welcome to the Money for the Rest of Us Plus episode for episode 36. Are you truly wealthy? Here on Saturday morning, the week coming up is New Year's, and I wanted to cover a couple of topics today. One, I've gotten a number of questions on undervalued baskets of securities and how you go about finding them, and I have some comments on that. Also, want to talk a little bit about private capital and a recent private capital fund I committed to and kind of talk about how that works. But before doing that, I want to talk a little bit about mobile wealth, because that was the topic of the episode 36, in terms of three types of wealth. You have monetary wealth, you have time wealth, and you have mobility wealth, the ability to go or work anywhere. And as I mentioned in the episode, those can fluctuate over time. So we can have periods in our lives where we're more mobile and have more time. I remember earlier this year, I was on a flight. I think I was flying to New Orleans for a conference, or to Ohio and to New Orleans. And I met a couple that were heading to England or the UK. And we're going to do a service. Basically, we're working on a farm. They were going to be caretakers for this farm for, I believe it was a year to 18 months. So he had just retired from his job, and I think she quit her job too. I'm not sure if she was working or not. But we got to talk a little bit about investing and finances and what they were doing. And they were an example of a couple who they're in their early 50s decided, we're going to take a break. We realize we don't necessarily have enough money to live for the rest of our lives, but we do have sufficient savings, more than ample savings, to take a sabbatical, if you want to call it that, or a break they had some time well. They had some monetary assets that allowed them the time to take a year and a half to go experience living in the UK, and they had the mobility to be able to do that. And so it doesn't have to be all or nothing. We can have periods of our lives when we have that. Have a great example, not a great example, the cool thing that happened this week is we're leaving in January, first week of January. We're heading to Phoenix for a few weeks, and then we'll be in Orange County. I've mentioned in the past, we own this condo down in Park City, or timeshare, which is converted to a point system. So we have all these points. So we're cashing in a lot of condo points, timeshare points, to go get into the sunshine. And it allows me to experience a little experiment with continuing to support the podcast and the hub from the road. And it'll be a good experience because we've been looking for a window or a cheap plane ticket to go travel overseas. And with oil prices falling 40%, at some point airplane tickets are gonna fall. And we've seen this in the past. All the airlines are saying, no, we're not gonna lower prices. It's gonna go fall all to the bottom line, I guess, in terms of profit. But there's a website that I've been using lately called Airfare Watchdog. And they also have a Twitter feed called Airfare Watchdog. And if you get on their website, there's a link that shows the top lowest 50 fares and for the day. And I've not spent a whole lot of time on the site other than I've been kind of monitoring for an opportunity, because we want to go travel somewhere overseas in May. And there's been cheap flights to China or to Taiwan, to China. We didn't necessarily want to go there. And although we'd be tempted to go back to Japan, my daughter really wanted to go to Scotland, and flights were $1,200 a piece to Scotland. And finally this week, there was a fare on Norwegian Air to Norway and to Sweden for $550, which for an overseas ticket is extremely attractive. So we talked about it as a family, and No one had previously had any desire to go to Norway. We didn't know much about it. They're certainly good Winter Olympians. And I knew there were fjords. And that was about it. So we booked the ticket. So we're flying into Oslo in May, mid-May for spring, and going to go explore Norway. That's an example of having some ability and being able to structure your life to do that. And again, most people aren't necessarily at that point, but you can have pockets where you can be like that. The other topic I wanted to share is I've got a number of questions regarding what I've said in an earlier podcast about finding undervalued baskets of securities and the importance of doing that and as a way to invest. But I think we need to recognize there's a hierarchy of investing in terms of what's most important and what's less important. And finding undervalued baskets of securities is important. It's what presents opportunity, but it isn't the most important. The most important aspect of investing, there's really, when I look at my investment philosophy, there's three components. One is be diversified, and that's common sense. Although if you've listened to the episode, I think it might have been Money for the Rest of Us, episode 30, 34. Are you truly diversified? One can almost never be over-diversified. Just having different slices of asset types, asset categories, not based on modern portfolio theory, but simply even if they're spread evenly, is beneficial. And I gave an example. I didn't necessarily have REITs in my portfolio this year, and this has been a great deal or a great year for REITs, which brings up an important component. REITs were not an undervalued basket of securities. REITs were fairly valued, and as are most asset classes right now, not necessarily overvalued, but fairly valued, yet they gained 23%. So in investing, the most important component is to have slices of many different asset types. A second component of that is figuring out, all right, what should the weight be in terms of exposure to stocks or to higher risk asset classes, such as stocks, where there is a risk that in an extreme event they can fall precipitously. Now, stocks, the longer term expected return is higher than bonds, particularly with bonds at such low interest rates. But stocks is sort of kind of a swing asset because if you're a buy and hold investor, you allocate and you hold on, as I've mentioned, like riding a roller coaster. But as you get into 40s or 50s, you can't necessarily stomach all that volatility because you can't afford to, you just don't have the time to necessarily recover during a major sell-off. And so the idea is, can we adapt our stock exposure based on market conditions? And I think it can be done mainly because I've been doing it for years. I look back at the time frame of 2007-2008, my stock exposure was very, very low based on market conditions. In fact, in 2008, going into the summer, I didn't have any stock exposure. I was primarily in cash, not based on predicting the future, but simply focusing on market conditions, particularly the level of fear and greed. But in that aspect, that the momentum within the market that was breaking down. And I've given an example of one aspect of momentum. When you shoot a basketball into an arc trying to hit the hoop, there's a point where the basketball leaves your hand and it's going up, and it's rising and it's rising at an increasing rate. In other words, even the absolute market is going up, but also the momentum is up. And then there's a point where the basketball starts to arc down. It's still going up, but not as fast. And so the rate at which it is rising slows. So momentum is slowing. Market, and then there's a point where it peaks and the momentum has stopped completely, yet the market is not, or the basketball is not falling. And so that's an example, and that was what was occurring in 2007 and early 2008. The market had peaked and momentum had broken down, breadth had broken down, and there were some definite headwinds at the same time on the economic front. So you look at economic trends, we look at the momentum, the level of fear and greed, which was the level of greed in 2007, 2008 was actually very, very high, at least the first part of the year. And so all those things came together. So I reduced exposure to stocks. And then going into early 2009, evidence, market conditions, what was happening now showed that the economy appeared to have bottomed. And a lot of the PMI surveys and some of the other things were showing an improvement, even though we were still in a global recession. You also had the level of fear very, very high, but yet momentum started to increase. And so at that point, I started adding more stock exposure. And that's kind of been the start of a secular bull market. And so the most important thing you could have done investing the last 5 years was to have stock exposure. And I've generally had some, but I admit, if you way back in episode, I think maybe 22, where I showed a map of my holdings over time, it was called Investing Without a Map. There were times I had reduced stock exposure when I really probably shouldn't have. And one of the things I'm trying to do is be a little more not so jittery when it comes to making shifts. And investing is something you continue to learn as you do it, even me. And so, but the most important thing I've done the last 4 or 5 years was generally, yes, I had stock exposure, at least some exposure, but also had exposure to other risk assets. And market conditions right now are favorable for stocks. I'll talk about that when I release the most recent market or investment conditions update next week. So that's the second very, very important thing to do, is to make sure you have exposure to risk assets such as stocks when market conditions are favorable, and to reduce your exposure to stocks when market conditions are unfavorable. Not necessarily zero, but certainly on a lower end of the range. Everyone should kind of have a range of stocks that they're comfortable with based on certainly their age, their ability to recover if we hit an air pocket, essentially. Younger investors can have way more exposure to stocks than older investors. One, because they have more time to recover, and two, they generally have smaller portfolios. So as your portfolio, as your monetary wealth grows, allowing you more time wealth and mobility wealth, there you have to be more cognizant of your stock exposure. But you should still have some when market conditions are favorable like they are today. The third thing then is this idea of finding undervalued baskets of securities. And that really comes third. So you want to be diversified into many types of baskets, and that's why I typically hold ETFs. So you're holding thousands of securities, but you're holding different asset types. And then you're adjusting your level of stock exposure based on market conditions. And then the third thing is looking for these undervalued baskets of securities. And my fear is I've maybe kind of put that third leg, sort of overemphasized it in the sense that it made it sound like they were always available. And you just find it and you're there. And you're really not. They're not, these opportunities don't come along as often as I would like. They used to come along a lot more frequently, but particularly toward the end, or 5 years into a bull market, there aren't a lot of undervalued baskets of securities. Back in 2009, there were non-investment-grade bonds, investment-grade bonds, stocks. I mean, everything was cheap, and there were baskets everywhere. So just holding some ETFs in these areas that particularly they had gotten very, very sold off tremendously was very, very attractive. Now there's not that many opportunities. And so while I talk about it as one of the tools or one of the legs of investing, the primary way that I've made money in my portfolio is just having stock exposure. And then I have adjusted that on the margin based on seasonality, based on the level of fear and greed. But these are more short-term opportunities. Kind of finding a basket of undervalued securities, it just doesn't happen that often until you get a market sell-off, and then those opportunities pop up, which is another reason to adjust your stock exposure based on market conditions, because then you have dry powder, you have the cash that you can deploy into those opportunities. Finally, let me just say that I'm going to discuss this in more detail in the video course, Learn to Invest in 7 Steps. We're in a module now that's focusing on investment mentors, but then we're turning to asset classes, and I'll kind of talk about some of those principles as part of that video course. So that'll be coming early next year. So this topic of private capital, I think what I want to do is to do a separate audio lesson that I'll release next week. This is going to take more than in the 2 minutes or so that I have. So look for that next week. I'll do an audio lesson on private capital. Any questions on the other topics that I discussed this week, you can email me, jd@jdavidstein.com. Thanks.